south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's talk a little bit about solar panels and going off the grid. Yep, I get questions about it all the time because I've dabbled in it myself. And the truth is, I'm always keeping up on the latest and greatest tech stuff because, you know, being an engineer in the past life, you just have sort of an addiction to gadgets. Now, there's something we haven't talked about much yet involving installing solar panels here in Latin America. You'll see right away if you ever come down here and drive through any of the little subdivisions that most all the roofs are flat. At least 90% of them anyway. And you have to wonder why that is, because we're talking about an environment here where it rains like hell 6 months of the year. And man, when it comes down 4, 5, even 10 times harder than your typical rainstorm up in Milwaukee or New Jersey. Now, that's not to say it's always coming down during the rainy season. You get it for an hour or two, sometimes 3 or 4. Then normally you get some hours of sunshine, and then it repeats the next day, and the day after that, and the day after that, etc. Though sometimes when you get a hurricane or a tropical storm, it could be rainy for 3, 4, 5 days at a time with no break. But that's not the usual case. It's usually a couple hours with a really heavy downpour, and then it's over, at least for the day. And when I say it rains, it really comes down. It's hard to imagine unless you see it for yourself. Many times, it's almost impossible to drive in, especially at night. And it's not only because you just can't see, because your wipers can't keep up with it. It's that once the rain hits the roofs and the houses, it's got to go somewhere. And that's pretty much anywhere it wants to. And that's why practically every time there's a big rain, a good percentage of street intersections are completely flooded out, and they could remain flooded out for an hour or two after the storm because the sewers and the drainage vents are undersized. I mean, this is Latin America, you know. And even when they're built to code, no one's ever out there cleaning or maintaining them. In other words, periodically getting rid of all the plastic, leaves, branches, McDonald's wrappers, etc., that have clogged things up deep underground. Though that's not to say that governments don't have street departments that are in charge of cleaning the streets, highways, and drainage ducts. And they do clean the streets superficially. You'll see little city crews of guys and gals in matching municipal or government t-shirts manning their brooms and dustbins out on the streets and highways apparently doing their jobs. But in truth, it's only cosmetic. Sure, they periodically go through and pick up all the plastic and litter and stuff, but they're not down there pulling sewer covers and cleaning drains, which is why you'll see flooded intersections during every rainy season, and regular cars that are low to the ground, backed up for blocks, cautiously inching their way through the lake that wasn't there yesterday. And many times they'll just pile up on the embankment, scared to drive through because they don't know how deep it is. And justifiably so, because your average car has a running board that's probably only 6 to 8 inches above the road. And the height of the water during a big rainstorm could get much higher than that. That's why I always recommend gringos and expats buy a car that's higher off the road, like a pickup or mini SUV. Because obviously, they always have better clearance than your average car. Not to mention the tires themselves are larger, wider, and with heavier duty suspension systems too. So they're able to take a nice big pothole without blowing a tire or screwing up the front end alignment. I mean, really, the last thing you want is to blow a tire at midnight on a desolate, badly lit Latin American road. I could tell you many times when I was driving on one of those roads and I hit an unmarked pothole. Problem is, if you got a small car, you're likely to blow a tire, bend a rim, and do some real damage. Unless you're driving a pickup, an SUV, or a mini SUV. By the way, SUVs here in Latin America are called camionetas. Camionetas. And it's true, many roads here in Latin America are very badly maintained. However, if you're driving during the day, you can see where the potholes are. At night, forget about it. Even if you know the area, new ones are popping up all the time. And at night, most roads are badly lit. By the way, not so long ago, Latinos returning from the States would tell me how great the roads were in America. But they're not saying that anymore. Yep, it's the deteriorating infrastructure up there. But we were talking about water, the rainy season, and flat roofs, right? Well, as mentioned, about 90% of the buildings here in Latin America have flat roofs. That's because builders and owners are always thinking that they might add another story in the future. Now, I know that almost never happens in the States. You build a house there or you buy one. Who's thinking about tearing off the roof and adding another story? No one, right? I mean, I don't think I've ever met anybody in the States who thought, hey, I got a big tax return this year. Let's add another story to the house. What a good idea. Not. First of all, most houses in the States are made out of wood and metal studs, unlike in Latin America, where almost all the construction is block and concrete. For that reason, up in the States, most structures just couldn't support another floor. Too much weight to bear. Most stick-built houses would be structurally unsound. Plus, the building codes would never permit it. But here in Latin America, with all the block, brick, and concrete, it's possible to add a couple of extra stories on a whim, and the building can take it. So anyway, with that being the standard thought in the average Latin American homeowner's mind, what you end up with is flat roofs. Generally with a lot of ugly rebar sticking out of them, just in case someday the dome materializes to add another story. Now, you're probably thinking if you're going to go off the grid and go solar, a flat roof is cool because you can get up there, slap on the panels, and hey, it's easy to do and they're easy to batten down. With a flat roof, it's very unlikely you'll fall off a ladder or break a leg. Problem is, when solar panels are installed at an angle less than 10 degrees, they get dirty fast. And not just your regular kind of dust dirty that a good rain will wash off. Problem is, all solar panels have a little raised border around the edge, like a small picture frame. So if a panel's laying flat or at less than 10 degrees from the horizontal roof, you'll get water pooling up at the bottom edge. And if a panel's set at a really low angle, the water will pool on parts of the glass on the panel. In fact, I've seen some panels installed completely flat, and the frame's acting like the walls of a container, creating a kind of a panel swamp, a little swimming pool. And then, when the sun comes out and all the water evaporates, you get kind of a baked-in crud layer that won't come off unless you scrape it down with something that's got a decent edge on it. So, if you have a flat roof, definitely choose your solar mountings so that you have a slope of at least 10 degrees. And even at higher angles, you should get up there once in a while and clean them up. The problem is, dust, leaves, and other organic crap can collect in them, and if you got a leaf or two or some organic rot, when the water dries, you'll have a real problem. You know those plastic polarized films they put on car windows to tint them? If you ever watch them apply that stuff, you'll see they take a spray bottle with just a water mist. And after a couple of hours in the sun, it's stuck on the windshield for good. That's the point. The same thing applies to solar panels set at a low angle. Now, you might be thinking, what's a little dirt or crud on a solar panel? When the sun's out, especially here in Latin America, man, can it penetrate. But dirt and crud can be a big factor. There are actual dirt accumulation tests that have been made to measure solar radiation degradation with dust and dirt. In fact, at Google headquarters near San Jose, California, they've got a massive solar farm out there. They've done the studies. They found that solar panels installed almost flat horizontally on their carports, after 15 months, the dirt cut the solar energy output in half. Of course, after good cleaning, the output came back to 100%, but they found 8 months later, once again, the panels got all munged up and the output was cut by a third. And a loss of a third of your power is huge. In fact, one solar panel installer that I know told me there's a need to tell everyone that installations should be cleaned at least once a year, no matter what angle the panels are installed at. He mentioned that he installed a big commercial installation in Puerto Rico a couple of years ago. The panels are sitting at 24 degrees, more than double the 10-degree minimum. He told me after a year he was called back because the system was losing efficiency. He found they were baked with contaminants, mostly dust and pollen. But it's the pollen that's the real problem. It's got a sticky, gluey surface, and even a hard rain won't take it off, and it accumulates. And the best thing to use to clean those panels? If you don't have a power washer, one of those cheap rubber squeegees with the sponge on one end, the kind those little bothersome guys on street corners use to muddy up, then clean your windshield for a quarter or two. Man, those guys can drive you nuts, especially here in Latin America. There's a million of them. Though they're nice about it, they don't get pissed off if you refuse to pay them. Most times they're hovering around you before you have a chance to wave them off. Now, I don't know how prevalent those guys are up in the States, but down here in Latin America, it's got to be one of the most miserable, thankless jobs there is. But still, they're joking around, laughing, upbeat, and happy. You got to give them that much. And for the record, I don't usually stiff them. even when the car's just been washed, and they muck it up and make it worse by leaving streaks on the windshield. The fact is, 25 cents here in Latin America will still get you something to eat. An avocado, a couple of bananas or apples. Up in the States, a piece of licorice? You tell me. Oh, and by the way, regarding solar panels, I just checked on OLX.com yesterday now. There are all kinds of vendors and solar installers selling those big 320 and 360 watt panels for around $100 a pop. And at that price, it's just amazing. That's a third of a buck per watt. I remember it was a buck a watt just 2 or 3 years ago. And for those of you who've been keeping up with me and my solar recommendations for having a complete off-the-grid system here in Latin America, you probably remember me saying you'll only need about 5,000 watts of solar panels to run everything. That is, except, of course, if you have an electric car. Then you'll probably want 8,000 or even 10,000 watts worth of panels. Now, I'm talking about being in the Altiplano, where you don't have heating or air conditioning bills. But just think of it. If you get 5,000 watts, that's around 15 panels, around $1,500, though probably closer to $2,000 when you include the racking, the metal mounting racks and fasteners. You can just about double that if you're rigging it for a house and an electric car. Then, of course, you need the controller and the batteries and such, and that's the most expensive part these days, the battery. But still, you should easily be able to put a whole system together for around $10,000 to $12,000. Now, of course, even if you're completely self-sufficient, I don't recommend you completely disconnect from the grid. That is, you want to keep the power lines coming from the street running to your house. Then it's simply a matter of throwing the switch whether you want to stay off the grid or connect into the grid. Because maybe, for example, you're going away for a couple of months and you want to power down your system. In that case, you could switch over and leave it hooked up to the normal grid, the electric company. Now, of course, you know, even if you never use power from the grid, if you don't disconnect completely, that is, call them up and say, pull the wires, you'll have a monthly charge, probably like $3 to $5. There's always a minimum charge, even if you don't use any electricity at all. Big deal. So it's a couple of bucks a month, and it's always there as an emergency or insurance policy. For example, in case you need to do some maintenance on your system or change components. Then you might have to shut it down for a day or two and just hook right back up to the old grid for a couple of days. Or not. Enough said about that. All right, how about this news coming out of Brazil? Here's something that doesn't make sense, but people are doing it all the time. Title of the article translated from Portuguese, of course. Songbirds to raptor eggs are being looted from Latin America's bird species. And I'll paraphrase this as usual, cut out the chaff. It says, in the case of the infamous Irish trafficker who's facing extradition in Brazil for stealing peregrine falcon eggs, this has brought attention to the diverse ways in which the region's avian species are being plundered. All right, let me stop just for a second and say this gets really interesting, so pay attention. One guy, Joffrey Lendrum, is currently completing a prison sentence of 3 years and 1 month in the UK after being arrested in June of 2018, having flown in with 19 eggs from endangered birds of prey tied to his body, including vultures, eagles, hawks, kites, etc., with a value of around $130,000. Then it says, prosecutors in Brazil, from where he skipped bail in 2016, are now requesting his extradition from the UK. He was arrested in Brazil trying to board a flight from Sao Paulo to Johannesburg carrying 4 albino peregrine falcon eggs that he obtained illegally in Chile, which were worth an estimated $80,000 on the black market. He was then sentenced to 4.5 years in prison in Brazil, but skipped bail. But his case is just the tip of the iceberg regarding the pillaging of Latin Americans' native species. Turns out on January 15th of this year, a Belgian citizen, Hugo Konings, was arrested at Lima, Peru airport trying to smuggle 20 live birds in cardboard boxes onto a flight bound for Madrid. He's facing 5 years in jail. Then it says, a December 2018 report by the Wildlife Monitoring Network, Traffic and World Wildlife Fund has found smuggling eggs is preferred over smuggling live birds. Why? Because it's much easier and the penalties are minimal. Besides, eggs don't need food and water, they don't yak, and they don't poop. For example, a National Geographic report revealed that traffickers launder the eggs of one of their preferred birds, the macaw parrot, illegally smuggling them into Europe, incubating them there, and then selling them off legally as having been bred in captivity. Now, you see, the only way to detect if a bird was truly bred in captivity is to carry out DNA parentage testing by plucking and then examining feathers to see if the birds have truly the parentage described in their paperwork. And if you think that colorful parrots are the most desired, you'd be wrong. To Turns out poachers love to import peregrine falcons, the fastest bird on earth, reaching speeds of over 320 kilometers an hour. The falcon is prized by rich falcon enthusiasts in the Middle East. Another prize catch is the large-billed seed finch. It's taken from the wild to be used in songbird competition. People bet on how many songs it will sing in an hour, for example, or how long it can keep singing. Turns out these songbird competitions are popular with the wealthy in Guyana and Suriname. And now the practice has spread to expatriate communities in New York and the Netherlands, too. Who'd have thunk, huh? With each of these small birds fetching between $3,000 and $5,000 apiece. All right, so there you have it. Sad but true. Human beings can be pretty nasty. Which is why, I suppose, Samuel Clemens, you know, Mark Twain, always said he'd take a dog over a human any day. But to me, it's even worse just hanging around and living your life in Latin America and seeing how exotic animals are treated, especially birds, when they're captured and displayed as pets. And really, what can you do or say when you're at someone's house and you see a big, colorful parrot or toucan sitting in a dirty, smelly cage in the hallway? Most times you see them in a cage so small they can barely turn around without scraping their wings against the side of it. I can't tell you how many times I've seen things like that. Makes you sick. Sure, you can tell the owner that's not right, and obviously the bird's not happy about it. But stuff like that's so prevalent in Latin culture, trying to explain what's wrong with it just makes you seem like a crazy gringo. All right, so it seems at least that there's some kind of crackdown on this internationally, at least when people try to fly. But as far as living in a Latin country and owning an endangered species as a pet, sure, there are laws against it, but there seems to be pretty much zero enforcement unless you're crossing borders. Hell, if right now I decided I wanted to have an endangered species for a pet, let's say a jaguar or an ocelot, all I'd have to do is mention the animal I'm interested in, put it on Facebook, Instacrap, or OLX.com, and soon enough I'd be contacted. In fact, occasionally when I go to one of those gigantic fruit and produce markets, I'll run into a couple of guys who have endangered animals in cages. And sometimes, as is the case with the birds, they're walking back and forth on the guy's shoulder with a leg band tied to a leash. In fact, I've snapped a few photos here and there of guys selling birds, and they don't seem to like the camera one bit. But they're the go-to guys if you want any other kind of endangered species, too. I know, the whole situation sucks, but there's not much you can really do about it except never have one of those animals yourself. All right, now let's talk a little bit about taxes and the cost of doing business on the books. And of course, on the books means brick-and-mortar businesses and or an internet business or home office where you've actually gone down to the local municipality, gotten a tax number, a sanitary certificate that you post on the wall, and a permit to do business. Oh, and about that sanitary certificate, I don't get that either. Everyone's got to have one, though, and it's posted and framed, usually, behind the cash register. Yep, and they call it a sanitary certificate, which makes you think there's been some kind of detailed hygienic inspection. After all, that's what the word sanitary implies, right? But you'd be wrong. It's just something you need and have to pay for before you can open. Just part of the multiple layers of bureaucracy you have to deal with when opening up a business on the books. And one of the main reasons why perhaps 30% of all the businesses here in Latin America are off the books, meaning they don't collect or pay taxes to the government. Well, I take that back. They might collect taxes and tell you they're collecting them, but they just might not be paying them to the government. Because, you know, down here in Latin America, tax evasion of all kinds is the national sport. Though some locals swear that the national sport is cheating on your wife or girlfriend. There's enough of that going around, that's for sure. So then what about taxes and the cost of doing business on the books here in Latin America? Well, here's a fact. The portion of Latin American tax revenues collected from indirect taxes, such as the VAT, which is the national sales tax, and custom duties, excise, and other operational taxes, are really how Latin American governments make most of their dough. That is, aside from borrowing from the Chinese or the World Bank or the IMF and defaulting when the payments come due. Don't laugh, it's happening again right now in Argentina. Whereas in first world countries, most of their tax revenue comes from taxing people directly, like income and property tax. In Latin America, that's not true. Most of it comes from the VAT, customs duties, and excise taxes. And in fact, those particular taxes called indirect taxes happen to be some of the highest in the world for the following countries: Argentina, Brazil, Costa Rica, Mexico, Uruguay, and Venezuela. And what that means is, in those countries just mentioned, companies there are incurring huge tax bills because they are stationary brick-and-mortar targets and therefore sitting ducks for those kind of taxes. For example, take Argentina, a country that's in default and technically bankrupt right now. It's got a VAT tax of 21% and an average custom duties rate on things imported of 13%. So what that means is if you buy an item that's been imported, the cost of that item to you is automatically 34% higher than it would be if you had bought it, let's say, online from Amazon or eBay, or any mail order house or operation outside the country. By the way, if you have a bank account or credit card in Argentina, the government charges 0.6%, that's a little over 0.5%, on every credit and debit card account and transaction. All right, now, if you take Brazil, for example, their IVA or VAT tax is all over the place, depending on what kind of items we're talking about. There's a huge lookup table, but get this. Their IVA or VAT tax rate varies from zero to an unbelievable 365%, depending on how the government classifies the good or service being sold. On top of that, you've got the average customs duty rate of around 13.5%. And that's why, in Brazil, so many imported items cost twice as much or more than what you pay for them up in the States. Then you've got Colombia, whose average VAT or IVA is 19%. Again, that's the national sales tax, with your average customs duties around 6%. And they too have a bank tax. That's a tax on all financial transactions, and that's 0.004%. Oh, and they've also got another tax called the excise or consumption tax, which, depending on the products, is 4, 8, or 16%, depending. Now, as for Costa Rica, they have an average IVA or national sales tax of 13%, and their average customs duty rate on imported items is 5.6%, which doesn't seem that outrageous compared to Brazil and Argentina. However, they've also got what they call an excise tax, that is a consumption tax, that ranges from 10 to 50%. And that, my friends, is how Latin American governments gouge businesses. Because, you see, if you have a business on the books, you're responsible for collecting all those taxes when you sell your product and turning those fees over to the government every month. All right, then, what about Mexico, since there are approximately 2 million gringos and expats living there? In fact, Mexico has the biggest U.S. expatriate population in the world. Well, Mexico's VAT, that's IVA, or national sales tax, is 16%, with the average customs duty on imported goods of 8.57%. Again, compared to Brazil and Argentina, that doesn't sound terrible, except they also have a special excise or consumption tax. Depending on the item or service, anywhere from 3 to 160%. God, it's no wonder a third of the working population is off the books. All right, let's compare those countries to a couple of other Latin countries that don't hammer businesses on the books quite so hard. For example, Guatemala. It's got a 12% VAT tax and an average customs fee duty rate of 5.6%, with no special consumption or excise taxes either. Similar to El Salvador, whose VAT, IVA, or national sales tax is 13%, and their average customs duty rate, 6%, with no additional killer consumption or excise taxes. You know, we could go down and list every Latin country, but let's finish off with Uruguay. Now remember, Uruguay is a country that produces a lot of food. It's self-sufficient in that area. But they have very little manufacturing. They import all electronics and household items, etc. And their VAT or IVA or national sales tax is 22%. And the average customs import duty rate, 10.5%. So that means right off the bat, everything you buy that's imported is at least 33% more than the same item ordered from abroad on the internet. But thankfully, Uruguay does not have a consumption tax. By the way, if you guys or gals want a copy of this report, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. It's got the tax situation on every Latin country covered in great detail. Oh, and speaking of taxes, did you know that the president of Colombia might just have an IQ over 80? Or perhaps it was just dumb luck that he came up with an idea that really makes sense. Listen to this. According to this fresh new article I have right in front of me, it says that nearly 85% of Colombians believe corruption is widespread throughout their government. Coincidentally, 85% of Colombians also believe that corruption is widespread within businesses. So then what do you do when you got a problem like that? Well, get this. The president of Colombia announced three measures last week aimed at generating popular support. What he's proposing is eliminating the VAT tax for 3 days a year. That means 3 days a year, everything will be 19% cheaper. By the way, according to the Subjective Well-Being or Happiness Report, that is the 2019 report on world happiness, turns out since 2018, Colombia fell 10% on that scale. According to that report, a 10% decline in happiness was also found with Mexico, Brazil, and Argentina, whereas the other 15 or 16 Latin American countries remained just as happy as they had been in 2018. So do you think it's a coincidence that the countries with the highest levels of taxation have the lowest happiness? Hey, don't get me wrong. Compared to first world countries, they're still extremely happy. It's just that the more heavily taxed Latin countries are slipping. Now, a few words about fake news. It's everywhere. You know, in this business, the radio, podcast, and media business, you know you're popular when people start posting fake news, fake facts, and fake email sites about you. Seems like the more popular you get, the more the haters come out of the woodwork. Take, for example, the most successful podcaster in the world right now. That's Joe Rogan. I listen to him myself. Man, does he have haters. He's actually a pretty smart, reasonable guy, but doesn't matter. He's popular, so he's got haters. They've created fake news sites, websites, fake book sites, fake Instagram and Twitter sites. In fact, he said on his show recently, there's so much fake news about him and so many cloned websites and so many people dissing him and all the pretenders and aggressive haters out there that he actually quit reading comments or doing any searches on himself on the net. The fact is, people who've got the time to waste creating trivial fake news and websites, etc., don't have a life. Like Rogan says, and their twisted minds are somehow living vicariously through someone else they could never be. In fact, Joe Rogan says if you go on the net right now, you can find articles and fake news saying he's a bigot, a racist, a white supremacist, a Jew hater, a Jew lover, a homophobic womanizer, Nazi, leftist, rightist, tax evader, and of course, stoner. But that he admits. And you know, there are people out there who make it their job to diss him and float fake news all over the net. But in the end, he just laughs it off and feels, hey, it's part of the job. Part of being popular is having haters. He says, just ignore it. Don't respond. By the way, he's had his podcast for 10 years now, and in the early days, he had to fire one or two people. Could it be because she was a thief and hijacked his PayPal account? Something truly sociopathic and traitorous like that? Who knows? But if so, I can see how someone you once trusted but had to give the boot could certainly become one of those haters. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.